Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies first, because we're awesome. Anyway, welcome to episode two of Newborn Libertarian. This is your host, Kim, and of course, with me is co-host Christian. Hello there, Christian. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great, and I'm excited to get into the second episode on race, privilege, and anything else we want to ramble on about. And today we actually have two guests on the show, each representing a different, I guess you could say, race or skin color or level of melanin or pigment in their skin. And one of them, just the call just dropped, so we'll try to get him back here soon. But the other one is Tim. So Tim, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Yeah, I'm a American Brazilian. I speak a little bit of Portuguese. It could be a little bit stronger than I'd like it to be. I was adopted by two white parents. Actually, my mom's half Japanese, so kind of white. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I've kind of grown up pretty much living the white privileged life that I think most people kind of see or either envy or hope that other people don't have or wish they have. We'll talk about it a little bit more. But glad to be here, guys.
All right, welcome aboard.
Tim, what was kind of your stepping stone into libertarianism or liberty, free markets? What kind of got you into that?
It kind of just came. I grew up in a family, I think, like you mentioned earlier in your last episode, Christian. It was a very evangelical, right-thinking family. My dad often tells me that he would be a libertarian if they had any chances of winning, but as I've told him many times, he's just a shill for the Republican Party. Anyway, I think as I got a little older, I actually got a little bit more left-leaning. I got close with my aunt, who was just a progressive to the hardcore, love her to death. So I hung out with her a lot, and she stayed with us for a while, and I just kind of fell into this progressive trance, I guess you could say. I used to be a Redditor. I kind of am still. And if you've been on Reddit, it is a progressive, just everything is Bernie this, Bernie that. But I think, actually, I started getting libertarian really kind of, I think, about a year ago when I heard Jason Stapleton's show. I think most of us are familiar with it. And it just kind of hit home, this idea of personal responsibility. I used to live a life of just blaming others. And once you kind of realize that life is better, with you and at the helm, it starts to improve a little bit financially, economically. I mean, I lost a little bit of friends who don't see eye to eye, but it happens.
That little grunt you just heard was Thurman, who we just were able to get back on the call. And Thurman's one of my friends that I know personally, and he's joining us from Texas. So Thurman, why don't you introduce yourself, kind of how you came to exploring the ideas of liberty, and what just tell us a little bit about yourself.
And if you own a gun, go Texas. Woo! Owning the guns.
Well, hey guys, I'm Thurman. I guess I'm very much new to the whole libertarianism. I started listening to the Jason podcast. I just got a number of books by Murray in Rothbard last night, and I got introduced to libertarian because Christian kept poking me in the side and kept getting in arguments with people on my Facebook. So it just either really just Christian, you said it best. Once you start thinking about liberty, you just can't stop.
Amen.
It's kind of infectious, and Murray is one of my favorite authors too.
Yes, definitely.
Well, I will say, and I want to say, I couldn't wait to get on the show to say this, because actually, as I went through reading Anatomy of the State and a little bit of Ethics on Liberty, I actually jotted down some things that I like about him, that I don't like about him, and some ideas that I'm still on the fence about, that maybe I just don't know enough about.
Okay, yeah. Let's go through with. We're gonna go round table. I guess we can start with you, Thurman, about what was the last book you read, and I guess if it was Anatomy of the State and Ethics of Liberty, kind of tell us some things you like, don't like about that. Then we'll move to Tim, and then me and Kim, we kind of share what we've been reading too, and then we'll jump into the subject matter.
Okay. Well, I read Anatomy of the State last night, and I'm trying to pull it up right now because there was something that I read. In the last episode, you said that when you had read some of his stuff, and it hit home, and it was some of the stuff that you had been thinking about all your life. And it was kind of the same with me too. And I wish I had jotted it down because I actually wanted to quote it. But let me just start with the things that, well, let's move on. Maybe I'll get back to that later. So some things that I agree with him on economics. The word is praxeology.
Praxeology.
Yeah, praxeology.
Praxeology. So I really like that. Self-ownership and his objective natural law basis for the free market. I was really on board with that. And then some things that I didn't, not necessarily. Okay, so the categorical opposition to all military, political, and economic intervention. Just the only disagreements with that, I know I read a part in his ethics, and also in a couple other books, there were some summaries that I read on Wikipedia. He was against the North attacking the South during the, for slavery in the Civil War. And he completely opposed that. And it was hard. It's hard for me not to be biased as a black man. I was thinking about that. And the more I thought about it, this morning I was thinking, I do agree with him in that it was wrong for the state to attack the South on that bounds. And, just the whole idea, I almost can't get completely behind, complete liberty, because me as a person, with things going on in the East and also in Southern America and just other places of the world, I'm the type of person that, I think we should go in there, not necessarily invade, but somebody should do something. I'm not the type to just idly stand by and watch something bad happen or somebody, just dragged off into a van. I'm the type of person that wants to do something. And coming from my philosophical background with Kantian ethics, Immanuel Kant says that the virtuous man will always tell the truth, even in the face of death. The virtuous man will always try and find the right thing to do. And it's really hard, and that's something that I'm struggling with right now.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. You brought about Rothbard and the Civil War, and he definitely did oppose the North invasion of the South. But then it wasn't necessarily, and it kind of plays into today's episode on race. Was the Civil War really about slavery or not? And, Rothbard is of the school of thought where, the Civil War wasn't necessarily about slavery. It was kind of about the South trying to break away. They're tired of the North doing their own thing and using the political means to move away. So like when Rothbard says, I don't support the North's decision to invade the South, that doesn't mean he supported slavery in the South.
Of course. I did not mean to say that.
So it's kind of like saying, I don't support the Japanese.
He was just against attacking the South's liberty. And I completely understand that. I think everybody should.
Yeah. But I think you bring up a good point, because a lot of people think that libertarians are kind of isolationists. We just want to sit here and do nothing. When in reality, what was it on the if you go to Econ Stories on YouTube and you watch this Keynes versus Hayek round two, Hayek kind of sums it up. The guy who's playing him kind of says, I don't want to do nothing. There's plenty to do. And of course, he was talking about, what to do in the face of recession. But, when you see things, I think you should speak out. And I think libertarians do speak out against it. They just oppose the one person doing it to be the state, who has a tendency to either screw things up or create problems that weren't there, because they're not acting with their own resources and doing what's best for them and best for who they're trying to help.
Okay. Well, yeah, I completely agree with that. But, the state, in our state, just current life, the state is the only one with the – so – back in the day, thinking on that, if the North hadn't have done that, who would have done that? Because I think we would all agree that slavery needed to end. It had been ended way before in Europe and other parts of the world.
Right. It has, but there's an economics of slavery that doesn't make any sense. So you kind of have to have the states help kind of propping it up in order for it to become economical and for it to work. So it kind of dies out on its own if it's not propped up by an entity. But hey, those are some great questions, and I think it's nice to have someone come in who's not just trying to preach to the choir and kind of think critically and have some questions about it. But Tim has been waiting here. Let's get into him. Tim, what was the last thing you read?
Hi, I'm pretty new to the libertarian movement, kind of like Kim is.
Yeah.
I think one main narrative that a lot of libertarians preach is know your economics. So I've actually been reading One Lesson in Economics by William Hazlitt, and it's absolutely phenomenal. You know, it kind of breaks down those things that I think a lot of us missed out learning in school, and it kind of, he breaks it down so that the average Joe can kind of understand what's going on. It's a great book. I'm about maybe 3/4 done, but it's great. I love it.
Yeah, I read through that one twice, and I kind of did a little blog on it. I need to keep doing it. I'm trying to kind of re-paraphrase his arguments for a younger person, but great book. Have you started that one yet, Kim?
No, that's actually on the list next, so I'm excited for that one. And of course, the nerd I am, I have an audio version and the printed version of it, and I'm going to consume them both over the weekend, like a nerd.
For those who don't know, Kim's eyes and ears are run by two separate minds. So she's got to read it and listen to it.
Not at the exact same time. I either listen to it and then immediately read it after, or vice versa.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. I love that one. And I can't believe, when Thurman told me he had downloaded like 10 of Rothbard's ebooks, I was like, holy crap. You know, talk about jumping in the deep end. You skip all these other people. He just moved right into the meat of it. So congrats for Thurman on that.
Yeah.
Running water, diving deep.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
So Kim, what was the last thing you read?
I'm actually, so this one's kind of interesting, and it's kind of something that I heard just listening to I think it was called Free Talk Live. And it's called The Right and Wrong of Compulsion by the State. I kind of vaguely mentioned it in the last podcast. It's by Avron Herbert, and he's definitely an anarchist. And it's pretty it's good. But yeah, if you're into if you're an anarchist, yeah, check that one out. It's pretty darn deep and makes a really good case for anarchy, and of course anarchy in the correct sense and not the mass media chaos sense.
I'll have to check that one out. Since I put myself in that camp, I started reading a little bit of chapters last night, just a few pages of America's Great Depression by Rothbard. I kind of wanted to understand, you know, a little bit about, because those of you familiar with the Austrian business cycle theory, you know, how monetary expansion is the only thing that can really lead to a general glut or a general business failure in the market in its macro sense, you know. So if there's something wrong with business and the economy in general, it probably needs to come from the money, because if the certain industries can certainly fail or consumer preferences can shift, but if they all of a sudden shift seemingly at once, there's something wrong with the money. So kind of want to understand the causes specifically that led up to that. Since Thurman brought up the point about, you know, the Civil War and slavery and race, I think that's fits right into our episode today. As you guys know, we're trying to go into race and privilege and some of these events that have been going on around, kind of what would a libertarian think of this? Is there anything to think about it at all? Go through some of the statistics. And I think all of us did our homework, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Alrighty. So Thurman, why don't you go ahead and start? Where did you want to get into first?
Okay. Well, I wanted to get to you real quick, if I may. I found that quote that I wanted to read. You guys mind if I read that?
Oh, no, read it. Read it.
Okay. So Rothbard says, "We must, therefore, emphasize that we, quotations, are not the government. The government is not us, quotations. The government does not in any accurate sense represent the majority of the people. But even if it did, even if the 70% of the people decided to murder the remaining 30%, this would still be murder. It would not be voluntarily suicide on the slaughtered minority. No organizationist metaphor, nor irrelevant bromide that we are all a part of one another must be permitted to obscure this basic fact." And I really like that, because he was talking about it was a useful collective term to mask the sense that the government is somehow a part of us, you know, the majority, you know, when we say we the people. And I really like that. But moving on, besides race, I really wanted to get down, because I also Rothbard, he opposed utilitarianism, and he called John Stuart Mill, which is one of my favorite philosophers, a woolly man of mush. And also in his another book, I didn't get to read, but I also read a summary of it. It was Egalitarianism as a Revolt Against Nature. And he said, let me go back to it. I actually wrote it down. Oops. Oh, man. Okay, here it is. Okay, so says, according to Rothbard, in this lead essay, status intellectuals attempt to replace what exists with a romantic image of an idealized primitive state of nature, an ideal which cannot and should not be achieved. And for me, I really like egalitarianism. And my only question, I'll submit and say, okay, maybe, you know, obviously ideals always can't be met, but why can't we achieve this ideal? And that's my only argument. Why can we not? Why shouldn't we? And he, of course, says that it goes against the ontological view of reality. That's the other stuff I wanted to get out. You know, so I guess in our discussion of race inequality, what questions would you have for me? You know, what do you want to hear from the perspective of a black man in America?
I thought it was interesting how you brought up Rothbard's quote about how, you know, if 70% of the people murder the 30% of people, so if the majority commit a crime against the minority, you know, it's not suicide on the part of the minority, because obviously they didn't vote for it, and just because they voted for it doesn't mean they consented to it. And that kind of plays into things in this topic today, because, you know, you could say the same things about, you know, did the Jews consent to the Holocaust because they voted or against or for Hitler? It doesn't matter what they voted for. It matters if they voted.
That's exactly what he says right before that, what I just read. He's talking about the Jews. You're exactly right.
So, and then I the first thing that comes to mind to me when I think about that, you know, you see all the memes on Facebook, you know, it's got a picture of some Native American chief, and he says, oh, everything was fine until the white man came. You know, and you just kind of want to point out, well, you know, not all of us are the government here. It was a small group of people who decided to use the military to get rid of them. And obviously, you know, the white people just wanted some moccasins. It's probably to trade with them or some good something like that. Who knows? But what kind of a current event or something that happened recently in the news the last few years really, really gets to you? And what do you think about it?
Well, you know, it's like I said before, it's sometimes I try to be as unbiased as possible, but there are definitely some stuff going on. Well, first of all, let me say this. I'm not in Baltimore, and I'm not in all these other places that are on the news. And I personally think that we, you know, Americans that are viewing the news, we will never get the full story. We will never really know what's really going on. But I want to point out one case specifically. Sandra Blair, if I remember her name correctly, she was a woman who got arrested. She was coming from another state. She came into Texas. Some state trooper pulled her out of her car, and they go off camera. The whole thing was caught on audio. Some of it was on video, and she died in her cell, you know, mm-hmm. 2 days later, and they said it was a suicide. And just everything about that case is fishy. I don't want to say everything in that case. I'm sure a lot of people know, but everything about that case was fishy. She definitely did not kill herself. So there was something definitely going on there. You know, I'm sure everybody else knows about, what was his name? Eric Moore, that guy who got choked out.
Oh, Eric Gardner.
On top. Eric Gardner, thank you. I'm so sorry. Yeah, so there's definitely some things going on. I try to read into the stuff as much as possible as soon as it comes out. But there are some stories that I don't go any further with, you know, specifically because I will never know the full truth. And, you know, even though there are some things that are definitely out there that I know is definitely a lie. And there are some things, you know, today race is still a big thing, even though, you know, racism may not be as democratic as it was back in the day. It's still a big thing today. And some people still are being killed because they're black or being, you know, what's the word? you know, prejudice is still happening, point blank. And the only thing that's going to stop it is podcasts like this, you know, people like us coming together and talking about it publicly.
And
that's good. Sorry, Cam, I didn't mean want to interrupt. I wanted to let Thurman, there's a reason you can't know the whole story, Thurman, is because you're a man, and you're obviously biased, so we'll have Kim weigh in on that.
Well, I'll definitely agree. Of course, there's still some, you know, racism going on. I also want to say in some of these stories, and of course, where some of my focus is definitely some of the stories like Mizzou, Yale, all stuff we had, of course, the silliness of the football team, and they weren't going to play if this whole, you know, there's racism, it persists over there, and, you know, getting somebody fired, and then, of course, the craziness with everybody protesting, and, of course, the reporter who was told to stop recording by the lady, I guess she, what was she, like a professor of, like, media or something like that, who was, like, teaching some weird stuff, I guess, involved, I don't know, 50 Shades of Grey. I don't know what the heck she was doing. I can't remember.
She taught a Twilight class.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what we do in our schools, people. Wonderful. Great education. I remember I actually have to do real stuff when I was in college. But we have all this stuff, and it's weird for me because, you know, I am mostly black. But I remember growing up, when I was born, I have to tell the story because I'm assuming I can't exactly see Thurman. I just see this nice still picture. And from your still picture, I'm kind of jealous of you because you look like you are always dark year-round and I have to tan in the summer. when I was born, I remember my mom said her sisters were like, oh, she's all high yellow. And I'm sure maybe, Thurman, you know the stories when, you know, lighter black people. I mean, I was told it persists from, you know, slavery, as the lighter black people in slavery days were normally the master's child. You could tell the lighter black people were probably the master's child because a black woman probably had been raped, and that's where that came from. And I'm not saying anything about bad about my family now. Love my aunts and everything, but they were just thinking since I was high yellow that I would grow up stuck up, but my mom was like, oh, heck no, my child isn't going to be like that. And as I grew up, nope, I never had that conceitedness because my mom was like, that is not going to be how my child is. But as I grew up, we have to admit there is also some racism in within the black community for lighter black skin, you know, lighter skinned black people. I mean, when I was growing up, I remember some darker skinned black women walking toward me and they wouldn't get out of the way because they saw my lighter skin and just would rather have run into me than move so that I can walk. And it just really confused me because I was a really young teen and I didn't understand it until my mom explained it to me. So it was just, it's a really strange thing that I would be loved by white people that just thought, you know, maybe I could pass. That was like, I could pass the brown paper bag test, which means I was the same color as the brown paper bag. So, you know, I could pass as white and I speak proper English only because I have an English degree. And if you try to speak the way some people say you should speak as a black person, like we can't have an education or something, then, you know, people have said, oh, I have friends still to this day that say, oh, you're white, you know, you're just white. And I'm thinking, what are you trying to say? Black people can't have an education, can't speak in whatever sentences we feel like. You know what? I always get offended when I was on the progressive side of things. And it's just really strange. So every time I hear people talk about racism, I'm like, wait, there's racism both ways here. Like, you'll have, so say it's always white people, but when they look at me and they hear me talk and they hear me on the phone and they see me and they're like, oh, you're a black person. I thought you were white. So when we're talking about racism, we need to realize that it's not just white people against black people. Sometimes black people against other black people. And there's racism everywhere. And there's also some things I start to notice on my Facebook is that all of a sudden when all of this came out, some of my white friends were on there talking about how they needed to start apologizing for slavery like any of us were alive. And right, talking about reparations. I'm like, oh my goodness. It was like all the people who were actually slaves that needed the reparations are in the grave. I'm like, way to talk about it now. And also what I found out is all these people wanting apologies are still wanting them from white people. When you want freedom and liberty, it shouldn't be wanting something from the people that enslaved you, apparently. real freedom is getting that from, you don't want to ask from, I don't want to need permission from somebody. If I want freedom and liberty, I take it for myself. I don't ask the permission from anybody else. And that's what all these people are doing. This Black Lives Matter thing, they're going around, I don't want their apologies. And the people who enslaved, they're dead. How can I ask for their apologies? So we... Go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you, Kim, for bringing that up, because reverse racism is also a thing. It comes from both sides, and I wanted to thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
I think people mix up sometimes equality and special treatment. Like, they can have both.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm not... You know, I'm not trying to point it out as to be hateful, because, you know, like, it's just a strange thing. I just think it's something that we're raised with. It's just something, of course, you know, as generations go, of course, my grandma, great-grandma, you know, it's just kind of something that's passed down. And as you grow up with people of different races, and in this show, of course, you know, I'm not trying to just make it all about Black people, because there's still some racism for other races, and goodness, there's a lot for Mexicans at this point. I mean, we got Trump over here talking about all sorts of crazy stuff. And then you have people on Facebook trying to mix in Mexicans with terrorists, talking about sending them back or whatever. And I'm like, are you crazy? What? I mean, a lot of the, I'm like, Mexicans are, that's fine with me. They're good for the economy. They're, I'm like, what are they doing? They're not doing anything terrible. Why are you guys trying to mix them in with terrorists? What is wrong with people around here? And just, you know.
That's kind of funny, like what you said, you know, do they want their equality or do they want their special treatment? Like, I, this the feminist meme, you know, third wave feminist meme. It's like, I'm a strong, independent woman. Now give me my free birth control. Like, what's going on here? And I mean, of course, it's not all about Black people. There's racism for other races, too. And we could probably get into that a little bit. But when you think about Trump, I just think about, you know, Schrodinger's immigrant. You know, they're simultaneously somehow too lazy to work, but yet they are, and they're on welfare, but they're stealing your job at the same time. Like, you don't know until you open the box.
Yeah.
Which one it is. So it's somehow both at the same time. It's just the logic where racism comes from, and kind of the dual narratives. It's just kind of funny. But Tim, since you're, I guess, the least like a majority minority here, hails from Brazil.
Ooh, Brazil.
What kind of things did you have to say about this? You know, are there any current events or are there any observations you've made?
You know, there aren't a lot of Brazilians around, so it's kind of, I don't have my foot in either camp. I kind of see a little bit of both. I have a sister who's actually, as far as we think, half Black. She has all the, you know, the facial features, and love her to death, and it's just sometimes she's been treated a little bit differently, so I can't really sympathize with her, but I can empathize with her. And I think that goes with a lot of some of my Black friends, and you know, they're just kind of like, you don't know. So I think it sometimes makes it a little different. And you know, growing up in pretty much a pretty white family, we were pretty, better word is sheltered from it, I guess. So it's an interesting topic, and some of the news things that are going on, it just seems to be like you either support, you know, Black Lives Matter, or you're somehow a racist. You know, I've had a few, you know, Black friends actually delete me and block me from Facebook, who I've known for a very long time, you know, for just not supporting them in general. And it's kind of, you know, it's tough to lose friends like that. But overall, I think, you know, the discussion is good, and it gets people thinking, definitely. Since I'm reading this book, I'll refer back to it. And it doesn't always have to be back to economics, but, you know, here's a little quote. The art of economics consists in looking not merely at the immediate, but at the longer effect of any act or policy. And I think when we make these progressive policies and, you know, affirmative action and these special treatments, instead of bringing people together, it really just tears us apart. And it kind of, you know, defers back to that they want to be equal, but can't get special treatment.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead, Ken.
Oh, just real quick. And also what I wanted to mention also with all of my white friends, it seems to also be fostering this atmosphere of white hate. And every time I say it, you know, they would get really offended that I would say it. And you know, I felt like it was true because they were talking about we need to recognize the you know, the racism. I'm like, and this is coming from people that I know have good hearts. And I'm just thinking, why are you allowing yourself to feel super guilty about this sort of thing when you know it's not in you? We know the people that are, you know, racist. They're not denying it, and we know it. And so it's forcing these people who actually, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people that have had some racist thoughts. I might have had some of them in the past. But, you know, don't let this weigh you down with guilt. This just should be an opportunity to think about these sorts of things and understand them, understand where these thoughts are coming from, and just to really understand the purpose and the thought process behind this and really to think about it, understand where these things are coming from. This shouldn't be some sort of, like, beating yourself up on the inside. Understand the situation, all the factors behind it, not over here just saying, oh, well, everybody's saying that white people are evil and we have an evil past. Everybody has an evil past, and actually a lot of groups of people have been enslaved, not just black people, in the past. So to allow yourself to be, in, like, you know, just because you're saying, oh, Black Lives Matter, and trying to be on the side with the black people so they don't bowl you over and run you over and so you don't look like a racist is not going to help. It's just fostering an atmosphere of freedom and liberty, not trying to make yourself look super guilty and not trying to get on the bandwagon of Black Lives Matter just so that you don't get deleted or blocked from Facebook. It's just understanding freedom and liberty. Don't sit there and punish yourself because you aren't the person that's enslaving anybody. Just be a loving human being that's not infringing on anybody's rights and freedom.
So, I was listening to an episode of the Tom Wood Show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking with Matt Zwolinski, who is an author from Bleeding Heart Libertarians. And Matt Zwolinski is kind of an interesting left libertarian kind of guy, you could say, where he kind of stands for a basic guarantee minimum income. And one of the reasons he says this is you can't really know if all the property today is justly held by someone who inherited stolen property. So what he's getting at is, you know, there are groups of people who acquired property at some point in time unjustly, and therefore we can't let their descendants have it. So, of course, logically, this leads to reparations. And then Tom brought up David Friedman's argument that, well, if this is true, it's not just black people who owe black African Americans. I guess that's the only kind of African American. They're not the only ones who owe reparations, but the tribesmen and the descendants of tribesmen in Africa who are probably not living the richest lifestyles also owe reparations. So we should go knock on someone's hut in sub-Saharan Africa and demand that they pay reparations for some African-American family who was looked at funny on the street, basically. So it's kind of funny, I think.
You know what's funny is I love when people call me African-American because I'm like, I've never been to Africa, but I have a really pasty white friend who's from South Africa. He's been in Africa. It's really funny.
Wow.
Hey, I got a question for Thurman and Kim.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a friend who, you know, I always ask him, you know, he's pretty active about, you know, being black and, you know, raised on Facebook. And I ask him, you know, what motivates you to do all this? You know, why? And he goes, well, I'm reminded every day that I'm black. So do you guys feel that is the case? And how often are you reminded? I mean, I'm curious to for everybody.
Those mirrors are racist. It's those racist mirrors reminding you every single day when you wake up in the morning.
Well, you want to go ahead first then?
Well, actually, for the most part, I'm reminded how not black I am. Because as you can hear me talk, I enunciate everything. I'm not walking around going, you know what I'm talking about, girl, right now? You know, I don't talk in Ebonics, so everybody keeps trying to remind me how white I am. It's actually very infuriating that language determines my race. So I guess nobody reminds me how black I am.
That's such a great question. I mean, of course I'm reminded every day that I'm black. You know, some of it by me, you know, because the way I talk, I'm cleaning my vocabulary up right now for the most part. But, you know, just 2 days ago when I was in Houston, I was in a bar with a couple of my friends and I was walking past a table coming from the bathroom and I just heard the phrase nigger cop. And this was in a small town called Huffman, right outside of Houston. None but white people in there. It's a small little hick town. And I just looked at this guy, and I smiled. You know what I mean? I racist stuff, you know, I've had my fair share of run-in with racism. And the first time it happened, it was really surprising to me, you know, but it does happen. It does happen. But for me personally, I don't take it bad. I don't take it personally. You know, like when this happened a couple of days ago, I literally just smiled at this guy and I stared him down really hard, but I smiled because I don't know what he was talking about. You know what I mean? I don't know that he's a racist. And he was really, you could tell he was really nervous when he made eye contact with me and he looked back and told all his friends, like, oh man, I think this guy heard me. So, you know, of course, those racist ass mirrors, you know, always reminded me I'm black, but, you know, people as well. And of course, you know, I have my own lingo and I like the black culture. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think we all should appreciate our culture. You know, I love Viking culture. And I love reading things about Sparta. You know, and they were an egalitarian nation, which I think is cool. So, you know, culture is very important, especially in America, mm-hmm. because we're supposed to be a diverse community. We're supposed to be a diverse country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you should definitely have pride in your culture. And I don't know what it is that, like, there's something, Thurman, about you that's, like, even, you know, you do speak properly and it's awesome, but, you know, between me and you, they probably guess that you're a black man before they guess that I'm a black woman. I don't know what it is. but yeah, I have pride in my culture, you know. It's not like I'm trying to, like, you know, if somebody was trying to say if I was trying to pass, I'm like, no, I'm black. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, but there's a difference in between having pride in your culture and, you know, trying to make your culture the culture, and it should be recognized, and, you know, people are putting you down if they, you know, if they insult it, you know, the way that Black Lives Matter is trying to, like, take over, you know, because I do have pride in my culture, you know, I have pride where I come from, where my family, I have pride in the fact that, you know, greens and, you know, grits and, you know, all the soul food, I love that, and, you know, our culture is good, you know, but you always should have pride.
I actually don't like soul food. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for that.
I feel like this is the end of the podcast now. Like, I can't believe you would say that. How dare you?
No.
How dare you?
So, I think this isn't going to be a libertarian podcast without addressing the elephant in the room, is where some people say, well, you know, racism exists in everyone. You know, I think there's prejudice in everyone. You know, people have their own likes and dislikes, but sometimes it comes to race and sometimes not. But kind of want to ask this question for Thurman and Kim again. You know, when you step back and think of it, do you think there's really any harm that any one person can do by being racist? And I personally think that racism in our country today has come from an institutional level, meaning not, you know, business, not this and that. And we can get into the economics of discrimination, which basically says, you know, discrimination doesn't make any sense. Because you can corner the market if you're not racist and pocket all the money. I feel like when, you know, coming down to slavery, defining slaves as 3/5 as a person, which is, I think, is really funny. It's just like, what?
Oh, you think that's funny, Christian?
Yeah. How racist?
Which 3/5 is it? Like, do you take like 3/5 of every body part? Or
yeah, I was like, what exactly is 3/5 of a person?
How did they come up with that number?
I mean, and then moving on down through, I mean, you've got Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, and you've got the government kind of upholding an institutional racism and you know, keeping the racists afloat, because I mean, you think back to Rosa Parks and the buses. These bus companies and transport companies, most of their clientele is black. So, for any one company to alienate the majority of their business, I mean, that'd just be stupid. But because the law was the law, they had to do this, or they could, you know, face fines. And so, do you think there is the biggest elephant in the room in addressing race? I kind of feel like it has been where we're trying to, it almost seems like we're divided against ourselves. Like, it's the Black Lives Matter against the racists, and no one really wants to address how the government plays a huge role and trying to make everyone forget what they've done in the past to institutionalize and enforce and sometimes violently enforce racism.
I just want to make a note before I jump into that, that I sit at the back of the bus. And I just find it funny because people always say, why do you sit at the back of the bus? I'm like, well, the point is now I get to have the choice to sit at the back of the bus as opposed to being forced to do it. However,
the cool kids sit at the back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez, man. That's the best. But, yeah, I just, it just seems to be easy. Like, the government is really good these days at creating a problem so they can make, like, some sort of process to solve it, because they really like to try to be the hero of stuff. It's similar to how, you know, it seems like, you know, they create a problem, like, you know, it's like, oh, there's an issue here, you have an ailment of some sort, we'll make sure we create and regulate a drug to fix it. It's just, they try to say that we're the culprits of causing and doing things, but I feel like, you know, especially even with, like, minimum wage and all that sort of thing, it's just like, they create the problem and then try to be the ones to solve it, but then they blame the people for it. It's just, like, it's an endless cycle, and I just don't understand how we can even bring awareness to that. It just, it's a, I don't know.
Education.
Yeah, and not Bernie
Education
Sanders.
Education is the only way.
So I was thinking, the one case that I really have a strong opinion on, you know, one way, because I don't know what happened with Trayvon Martin. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened with Michael Brown. I wasn't there. You know, I think we've all seen the video of the McDonald guy
getting
gunned down by police. And it kind of seems like the media is content to let it be the black community against the law enforcement community. And then, of course, the Republicans always pick up the tab of the law enforcement community because they're dedicated statists. But it seems to me like there are Garner case is the one that I have such a strong opinion on. And whereas so many people are like, oh, he, you know, wearing the I can't breathe shirts, and they think, oh, it's because he was black, he was targeted this and that. And it really was, you know, this guy was selling his own property to people. And because the state wasn't getting a cut, the state saw fit to interfere with his personal life. And when he stood up for his natural right to life and property, he was taken down. And maybe if he was, you know, I don't know what went through the cop's head. Maybe he was a racist. Maybe if it was a white guy, he wouldn't have been so aggressive. I don't know. But it seems to me that this whole problem in this case stemmed from the state getting involved in your life and trying to tell you what to do. And then they're content to let the people bicker amongst themselves so they don't look at the real problem here.
I wanted to say, the whole Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. You know, why not? You know, Black Lives Matter. It's not like these people are saying that all lives don't matter. And it's happened a couple of times on Facebook. It upsets me, you know, when I'm not like one of those like pro-black guys. I'm not a separatist. But occasionally, you know, I'll share some stuff from the Black Lives Matter people. And it irks me, you know, it grinds my gears just a little bit when I have one of my white friends, you know, whom I like very much, come on and be like, all lives matter. Why are you posting this? You know? Like, I think, you know, to continue on that, you know, language is constantly evolving. And I think you wanted to ask this earlier, Christian, you know, I mean, for me, you know, again, when racism happens to me, because it has, you know, more than five times, when it happens to me, I always try and defuse the situation. If a white person that came up to me that I didn't know and was like, yo, what's up, my nigga, blah, 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 you know, I wouldn't get angry. And I think, you know, we should, black people or a Brazilian person or a Mexican person who's called a wetback, I don't think they should get angry. Unless in the tone you can tell they're using it as a derogatory term. Unless you're being talked to derogatory, you know, it's not something to get angry about.
Yeah.
Yeah, like personally, I think it's great that a small community of the population is willing to stand up and fight and say, hey, there's an injustice going on here. Is their goal exactly always correctly aimed? No. Is their message always clear? No. But I think it's great that there is people standing up to the government. And I think once we can kind of show these people, you know, which side is really the best, you know, you know, this capitalist system, you know, the libertarian movement. And I think it's pretty exciting just, you know, to hopefully get these people on board and, you know, for better lack of terms, our side. but I, at the end of the day, I think it's great. Yeah, keep standing up, keep protesting. You know, the evidence is there, you know, that there are disproportionately more Black Americans killed by cops than white.
Yeah.
And there are other problems within the Black community, but each one needs to be addressed specifically and individually. Exactly. Otherwise, nothing's just going to get solved.
Yeah, I mean,
and it needs to be addressed publicly.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a right.
What were you going
to say? I said we have a right to peaceably assemble, of course. You know, it's constitutional. It's just sometimes I think, especially that one where they were disrupting that Bernie Sanders rally and was just like, you know, talking about.
I didn't
about
like that.
I hated that one because, you know, they were like, they're like, you yeah. can have the mic after, you know, Bernie finishes talking. And they were talking about how they wanted, they were going to be unruly and they just were being, I was like, you know, this is the perfect opportunity. They were like, they weren't going to stop yelling. And they, you know, I was like, that'd be perfect. Because they're like, okay, you can have the mic after Bernie. I'd be like, that's perfectly cool. I'd be like, okay. And when Bernie was done talking, I'd grab the mic and be like, thank you, Bernie. Thank you for being my opening act. And then I'd be like, hey, people, I think you're racist. And then I'd just drop the mic down and be like, booyah, and then leave. You know, something like that. But I feel like some of these opportunities they have, they're kind of mishandling them. And, I mean, Black Lives Matter is like, they have a platform. I just wish they would benefit from maybe trying to get some, you know, somebody to kind of coach them in the right direction. I'm not saying I want to be that person. I don't really exactly.
Like a leadership.
Yeah, I don't want to be part of that. I'm just saying, yeah, like a leadership, they would probably be using that tool and that vehicle. They just need to use a little bit better. But I just want to. Go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't think I wouldn't agree with it. It's a lack of leadership. I think it's too many people all trying to be the top guy at the same time.
Mm.
It's too many people trying to lead it and being just going over the top, doing more than they should.
So, yeah, I actually thought when Black Lives Matter people interrupted Bernie, I thought that was one of their bright, shining moments. Because when anyone interrupts Bernie Sanders, I guess it's a good thing.
It is.
Nothing else comes out of his mouth, but, you know, I'm looking at some statistics from 2002, and if you guys are listening 70 years in the future for whatever reason, it's 2015 right now. So these numbers, you know, can't have changed a lot, but these are outdated statistics. But even back then, so the white population is 69.13, the Black population 12.32, Hispanic 12.55, and other is 6%, because other, I guess they don't matter. But a lot of people like to point this out, and especially, you know, in the Black Lives Matter movement, that these kind of numbers back up how the institutional racism exists in government and sending people to prison. Now, when you look at the federal inmates by race, the black race makes up 43.91%, the white race makes up 34.72%, Hispanic 18.26%, and other 3.11%. So supposedly that means that the system is rigged in favor of white people. But then when you do a little bit of digging, this other 3.11, what it really seems like to me is that there is some kind of other privilege going on that's not white privilege. And it's the people who make up the other demographic who are the real devils here.
Well, I will say that white privilege does exist to a certain extent. There are plenty of scholarly articles that I come across all the time, you know, psychological article that I read, you know, police officers are more likely to shoot a black person in any, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen these training exercises they do where they go in and they raid a house, you know, adrenaline's rushing and up comes these things, you know, one's white, one's black, one's supposed to be like a hostage, another one's supposed to be like a terrorist. There are, you know, officers, just statistically speaking, are more likely to shoot a black person in the heat of a moment. That's a, you know, that's just a statistical thing.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting. And I think when we start looking, you know, identifying problems is one thing. Identifying solutions is a lot harder. Looking at you, Bernie Sanders. So when you think about it, you know, maybe it does come down to a law enforcement thing. If cops are more able to or feel like they can, shoot one thing, or maybe they have some kind of. Because I guess we could all consider ourselves millennials. So we kind of grew up in a different time.
Is a millennial? I've seen that term everywhere. Someone explain that to me real quick.
I believe it's anybody born from like 1980 maybe to I think now.
Damn it. I'm like 3 years into that. Ugh. Anyway, go on, Christian.
So, when you think about that, maybe they have these prejudices, but when I think and I try to identify, so we should say, look, the problem here seems to be the fact that it's public policing anyway.
Yes.
And of course, I would put myself in the anarcho-capitalist camp, so it's easy for me to point that out. But when you look at
and
it.
And I as well. Anarcho-capitalism all the way.
Thurman puts himself in that boat as well. We're on the same boat. But when you
get rid of the state.
When you see all these cops, like was it the one in Ferguson who is kind of like not even indicted by the people? It just seems like whenever and you know in Tulsa you had the cop who didn't even know it was his taser, or didn't know it was his gun. He thought it was his taser, supposedly. I find it believable that they're that dumb.
That's
and they
special.
Can't figure it out. You think that all these other public policing agencies, what can they do when something like this happens? You know, they just say, oops, my bad, and they take more of your money and they do the same thing. And there's no real change. Like, what would happen one day if someone went into Walmart and Walmart made a scene or the security at Walmart made a scene, you know, getting rid of someone who is a minority and it looked very racial in incidents, you know, maybe it wasn't, but it was. I feel like Walmart would take a hit, you know, in their public relations about, you know, because their money comes from the people choosing to pay for them. You know, the state, it doesn't matter what they do, they're just going to take more of your money and they're really not going to solve the problem.
Yeah.
You know, I want to jump on that. This is totally off topic because I'm also a transhumanist. I wanted to jump on this opportunity. So I think we all would agree that a lot of the bad policing that happens is just human error. And that's always going to be a thing. So what about, you know, I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with artificial intelligence and how it's getting. Yeah. So with that in mind, what if we had police officers who were robots? Or I want to say cybernetic organisms. I'm sorry. It's more than a robot. Because calculators, you know, of course they're calculators. It's not the same thing, of course. Calculators, computers, they don't make mistakes.
Well.
So
well, they do.
Yeah, they do.
It's
that's
human error.
Computers make the mistakes. So are the RoboCops going? Who owns the RoboCops and who's telling them what to do and who's programming them? I think is still a.
Because they're
gonna, I just wanted to throw that out there for food for thought. You know what I mean, that's such a bigger topic. I don't think we have time to even get
into.
Because
this IT person would still have a job, and they would be programming these RoboCops. And
but could a robot ethically or make a moral or ethic decision?
Well, they're actually teaching robots at this point to be able to say no when there is a. Like, say it's going to walk into some sort of object. They're now teaching them to have some sort of ability to say no when they need to say no. And then people are going, oh my God, these robots can say no. And of course, you know, unless we get the state out of these sort of things, they're now like trying to go out in the media and try to tell people they're telling robots now how to say no. So these robots can now just, what if they turn on us? So unless you get the state out of there, the robots are not going to have much chance because the media is just going to scare the living daylights out of the people.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I hate conspiracy theories, but it's so much more advanced than what we wrote right now. And the state is the one that's monopolizing on this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's so advanced. People just don't know it.
I want to jump on the technological aspect of this while we're talking about robots. Don't feel bad. There are always room to talk about robots on this show. You know, we love robots. Are cool, right? But it kind of goes back, you know, it does go back to who is in charge of the robots. Because, you know, when the state uses drones, they bomb hospitals in Afghanistan. But when Amazon uses drones, they deliver packages. So I choose the market here.
Well, my point being is that, you know, let's say 50, you know, just to be fair, 50 years from now. The robots are good. The whole thing about artificial intelligence is these robots are going to be their own beings. You know what I mean, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Cylons or Battlestar Galactica.
Of course.
But, you know, okay, yeah. So at the point of their singularity, when they come to the idea, you know, that they can make their own choices and they don't need a commander. You know what I mean? What about that then?
I still, well, human beings still have to, they're still robot. Human beings are still going to have some control over creating part of those machines. So as long as you have human beings around.
But does the, you know, this is kind of funny, wanting to bring the human action element of it. Basically what we're saying is, does the robot then become human? And does the robot actually make choices, or are the choices programmed into the intelligence based on certain criteria? You know, do they actually make choices, as, you know, Ludwig von Mises would say, or is it what it would be like a binary coded choice? So are they really human? Well, do they really act, or is it just action?
So this is where I always lose people, and I hate it, because I think they're their own beings. I mean, and yeah, it's not just our brains, ourselves, you know, they're no more than biochemical electromagnetic circuitry going on. This almost the same as this binary. I mean, so at first it would be the point where these robots are imitating intellect, and then it would actually become intellect, you know, actual intelligence.
But if they're just imitating, what's the point of having them?
Right. I was like, if they imitate us, I hope not. I hope they imitate something else.
Because supposedly some of these robots would do some things better.
I hope so. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, we hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, robots don't get tired.
They sure don't.
Well, I hope they make some really hot lady robots, because that's where my mind goes.
Yes, they don't.
Already on that.
They also already mix up their taser for their gun.
No. Oh, God.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. These robots won't make those kind of mistakes. You know, they'll calculate things in the moment and act so much quicker than a human would. Than a human trying to run away. You know what I mean? They could look at a human's face and see what it's, you know, predict whether he's going to run away or not. You know? So just
if I can divert us back to maybe the topic of liberty real quick, I always find it interesting that the same people who are so against cops and, you know, all the work that the local police do are just crying for more and more government. Feeding the beast.
Always.
Yeah, I think it ultimately it's beside the point, you know, as fun as robots are, but if the robots are still making choices that violate someone's life, liberty, or property, they're just as bad as the humans. You know, maybe they have the capability to stop someone before they run. You know, maybe they can get the job done better. But if the job is a job that doesn't need to be done in the first place, or if it infringes on someone else's liberty, why, you know, like Tim said, why do it if they're just imitating what's already going on? They just do it better.
Oh, okay. Now I understand what you meant by that. Okay.
It's kind of like the what Rothbard said about Milton Friedman, kind of, you know, the Friedmanites are saying, you know, the government is so inefficient at what they do. Why don't we have these policy prescriptions to make them a little bit more efficient? Where Rothbard would come back and say, well, you know, do you want to make the burglar who robs your house more efficient if he bumps over everything and you know that you've been robbed? Or do you want to make him so efficient that you don't even know you're being robbed when it happens and you have no way to defend yourself?
Of course.
So
like I said, I really did not mean for this to turn into a conversation. I just wanted to throw that out there let it be food for thought.
That is okay. This podcast is supposed to be conversational.
Yeah, we're just a part of these, I guess. So let's move on to Mizzou. Kind of some quick thoughts on that. You know, what we know there were some students who say that there were racist comments hurled at them by some person either on their own porch or driving through campus.
Sticks and stones.
Swastika. And there was allegedly someone 90 miles away who said on Yik Yak, the anonymous kind of Twitter, that they wanted to do something to someone at these schools. And apparently this morphed into the president needs to go for some reason. And from my perspective is what can the president really do to protect people's feelings? I feel like at some point they're acting like spoiled children. Like if someone is hurling out racist comments at someone, like I want to know who they are. So I know to tell people that, hey, this person's a racist, don't associate with them, and kind of ostracize them for being racist. But at the same time, you can't really do a whole lot about it if an event, if something occurred off campus or the suspect is in custody. I mean, what else is there to do? Like, and then on the other side of that, so many of these people were protesting, you know, it seems like these events that protest one thing seem to be hijacked by some movement who wants to move it in the other direction, who wants to turn the narrative into something else. So it suddenly became, you know, not Black students feeling appreciated on campus or feeling like they were being singled out or hurled racist comments at them on campus into something more about some kind of privilege.
Okay, so the podcast shut off for a bit, so we're going to change the course of my question here. Do you guys think there comes a point where, I mean, if we admit that there is some privilege that does exist, but to the extent that it plays in the other person's mind, so if I'm white and I have white privilege, my white privilege doesn't exist in or have any tangible benefits to me, but it exists in someone else's mind, makes judgments about me. So if we think it's purely kind of like a psychological type of deal, like Thurman was saying with the police and making quick decisions, does there come a point when your family's worth $20 million where the privilege just kind of, you can't fall back on that anymore?
I was saying I didn't understand that one. Can you re-put that question?
Okay, so what exactly is my so-called privilege? Like, what tangible benefits do I receive just from being white? And if it exists only like in the psychological realm, you know, I can't control that. You can't control what other people think. But I feel like some of the people who are screaming out privilege, 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 are especially like the guy who was on hunger strike at Mizzou. His family was worth an insane amount of money. Like, does there come a point where you can't really whine about privilege when your family's worth millions of dollars?
Well, I think it might have been in the fact that, I mean, one of the arguments from his side might be, yeah, maybe his family might be rich, but it's the fact that, like, when you look at him, people might be just thinking, oh, he's a Black guy, you know, maybe they'd be looking down on him automatically and then would have to find out that he's rich, whereas opposed to when they're looking at a white guy, maybe they're not thinking that automatically. If they look at you, Christian, maybe they don't just think, oh, he's probably, you know, that's just a white guy. He's probably, you know, he doesn't, you know, they're not thinking that. Maybe that's what they're coming from. They're thinking, oh, you know, that's not an automatic thought when you look at a white guy. Maybe that's where they're coming from. I'm not saying that's what I think, but maybe that's where they're coming from, that when people look at a Black guy, you know, their first thought is they're probably from the hood or, you know, probably on food stamps or, you know, they wouldn't think a Black guy's a millionaire. Maybe that's what it is.
Right. I think a lot of the media has a negative perception, especially on the Black community, because they're sometimes misrepresented based on what you see on TV or in the news or in any kind of media outlet. You know, I can, even as kind of a darker skin, I almost look white. I've never felt walking into a store and immediately have someone stare me down because they think I could be stealing something.
I've actually had people stare at me when I walk in the store.
So you're one of those, Tim's one of those low peachy people, right?
What do you mean?
Like your skin color is dark, so you're like a low peach. Like a
house nigga.
Tim's a high yellow.
So you just say a house nigga?
Yeah, I guess you would say a peachy flavor.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like in the summer, I'll get pretty dark, but it's kind of just looks like someone went tanning.
Someone named Tim.
Okay, I gotta ask Thurman a question. I'm gonna tell a story, and then I'm gonna have to ask Thurman if he's had one of these stories. It's the story like that. I think maybe even like some Mexicans have had these stories, but it's a story of maybe you've been racially profiled because some people ask you, you know, if you say because there is racial profiling, and it usually happens with cops. I'm not saying that I'm going to go railing against every cop, because I know plenty of cops, because before any cop listens to this and starts railing, because I saw in one of the libertarian forums just this guy go off on a libertarian forum about how they hate libertarians because we're against the military, against cops, which I can't say we are, though I see some libertarians that seem to be missing the message and will start railing against the military and cops, and I'm thinking maybe they haven't actually read the Constitution, because there are some, maybe the libertarians who haven't gone to the, like, the ANCAP side, that, you know, aren't exactly really against military, you know. But when I was about 16, I had a friend, a Hispanic friend. He was helping me and my family move. And there was time we were having like this, you know, we just finished moving everything. It was the last load. We were going to have a party at my new apartment. And my friend Caesar was the one with the license, and you can probably guess he's Mexican because his name is Caesar. There we go. Racial profiling 101. Name is Caesar. Caesar Munoz right there. And, we were in the car, and so we had the green light and we're going through it. And we get hit by another car coming through the red light. And then we're like, so they hit us almost like not a T-bone, like they hit us almost in the back fender. And so we're sitting there and we're 16 and we're like, holy crap, we just got hit. And it was my mom's car. And so we're freaking out, 16 years old. And so, of course, we sit there and wait for the cops. The cops get there. And who do they come up to first? The car that hit us was filled with about 4 white people. So you kind of know where this is going. So the cop comes, never addresses the white people in the other car. They take both of us 16-year-olds out of the car, puts Caesar in handcuffs, puts him on the hood. And they start questioning us, and they said, do you have any alcohol in the car? And we have, like, a case of Pepsi and Mountain Dew, and they're searching it. I'm like, there are no holes in the thing. And I'm thinking, we're wearing our pep band uniforms. We're band nerds. Like obvious band nerds. I'm like, at this time, I'm cross-eyed with big Coke bottle glasses, and I've got, like, nerdy weave and everything. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're nerdy 16-year-olds. You know, maybe he's just thinking, oh, these rowdy kids, but we're in pep band uniforms. I don't know what I could have, like, stick bone arms. And, like, I just couldn't believe it. They had my 16-year-old Mexican friend on the hood in handcuffs. And these people hit us from, like, at the back fender. I'm like, what did he think we did? Backed into the light? How the heck could we have hit them? Like, the front of their car was dented. And they never spoke to the other group. And so I was just like, to this day, I can't understand how in the world that happened. So I'm like, can anybody else explain to me what was going on there and how any of that could have been our fault?
You know, again, I just wanted to say, white privilege does exist to an extent. You know, it's not to say that those who may have the privilege, you know, are racist or white, you know, like Christian or whatever. It's just something that's imposed on us by society. And, you know, it's not always the cop's fault, you know, because, you know, I will say majority of the time, you know, black people and other minorities are the ones in gangs running around robbing people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I also would like to say my father, I'm from California. My father was LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, for 22 years. And he has so many crazy stories that most people wouldn't believe. I told him he needs to write a book. But so he was on the force around the time when the Rodney King thing happened. I don't know if you guys know, you know, guy that's beaten in the back of the head with a flashlight like 11 times.
It was crazy.
It was all caught on camera. It was like one of the first things of its kind, you know, where there was somebody like a citizen filming the entire thing, and all the cops, you know, there was not guilty. The jury ruled not guilty for all these cops that beat the crap out of this guy, you know, beat him in the back of the head with a flashlight. I don't know if you've seen those flashlights, how big and thick and heavy they are. You know, back of the head, 11 times. They ruled not guilty, and then a riot happened in L.A. Black people went and looted, did all kinds of crazy stuff, and they shouldn't have. You know, I don't agree with that. But at the same time, you know what I mean, why did these cops, 4 of them, all white, why not guilty? Why?
Yeah, that's, and we can't say there isn't a lot of black on black crime. We can't exclude that because there's a lot, there's a high percentage of black on black crime. I'm not going to lie about that.
Of course. Right. I think one thing we touched on earlier is that, you know, a lot of people are prejudiced, so they have a prejudgment to something or to someone just based off what you see visually. And it usually extends from what they see in the media and on TV.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that, you know, it's all race. You know, some of it maybe, but I think that just has to do with general appearance. Right. And our brain, you know, from, you know, neuroscience perspective, our brains actually piece puzzles together. You know what I mean? So we don't have to process things as much.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it makes good news when you put, you know, black on black crime on TV. It works.
Oh.
No one wants to watch that. They want to watch the black on white or the white on black.
Yeah.
That's like,
it's easier.
Part, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
I mean, here in Detroit, somebody gets murdered every day. And what do I see on most news outlets? That a lady, old lady got robbed. Or some guy got broken into.
Or
I mean,
the Packers beat the Lions.
Like what they show here.
It's like the South Park episode where they're going on, like, hate crime. Just like, this is such a stupid thing to call it. It's a hate crime. You know, all crimes are, at some way or another, you know, lead to hate. But then, you know, oh, I meant to get, when I talked to Tim and Thurman earlier, I had my totally unbiased news source that I was going to look at where I had some of my statistics. And now, since I X'd out it on my phone, I can't find it. But it was the totally unbiased NAACP. And
what?
For those
what exists?
You, yeah, so, but since I either cannot find it on my phone anymore, and I kind of thought about it, you know what, I'm not going to read this out loud, because as soon as these words come out of my mouth, they're biased by my whiteness, even if I read them.
No.
You know what,
no,
check your privilege. What does that mean?
Oh, where, I can find it on here,
I believe there's an MTV movie coming out about white privilege.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they name it Check
Wow.
Your Privilege. I want to see that FX show that they're going to have called, was it OJ versus the People? Anybody want to take a guess as to if OJ did it or not? Was anybody alive to even know?
I have
know
no it? Idea.
Oh, my God. I'm so old.
I know the case you're talking about, but
wait, how old is everybody? I know how old Christian is.
I'm 25.
Oh.
I'm 22.
Oh.
I'm the baby.
Oh, I'm so old. I'm 32.
Oh.
Maybe I shouldn't have named this newborn libertarian because I'm, well, actually, I think Christian.
You're the most unnewborn one here.
Newborn libertarian, I guess.
You haven't been a newborn in 32 years.
Yeah. Dude, I've been 25 for how many years now? Should I bust out the calculator? I have one. I should loan it to Bernie Sanders.
You know, I did want to say this earlier, you know, about the whole Black Lives Matter and them really rudely coming on the stage. I will give it to Bernie Sanders because everybody hates on him so much. He handled that so well.
Yes, he did.
Just said, okay. You know what I mean? Like,
great.
A guy, you know, just running for president, you know, as a person that's trying to be about the people, he let those people speak, and he didn't even chill. And, you know, he was really good friends with Martin Luther King, but these black people didn't know that, you know, like, they would, I just thought it was so ignorant of those, those two girls.
Well,
not knowing, you know, like,
yeah.
He then went on to hire, I believe, one of the heads of Black Lives Matter First campaign.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Now, Bernie Sanders, as a person that I would sit down and talk with, I wouldn't have a problem with that. It's just, as my president, no.
Well,
okay, you know what?
I agree with Thurman. I think that he did handle it really well because, I mean, you just think about what Trump would do. Like, Trump
would
fire off stage. Like, you're fired.
Oh, like, wasn't there, like, some random report, you know, because I still listen to Rachel Maddow, even though I've, like, tossed off my progressive ways. I still listen to, like, it's like a punishment. Like, when I do my nightly bedroom, like, routine of, like, lifting weights, because that's like a punishment. I listen to progressive shows so that I don't always have, like, you know, I'm like, okay, I need to know what everybody is saying, and I listen. And they had some sort of report about how, I guess somebody was attacking some guy at a Trump rally. And he just kind of let it happen, and, like, he was like, just get him out of here. And they were just, like, attacking this guy. And he was just saying, he wasn't doing anything about it. Just let them attack this dude, like, physically attack this dude at his rally. I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. And, of course, he's still leading in the polls in the GOP. And I'm like, here's Rand Paul just slipping. If they even have a kids' table for the next debate, Rand Paul is going to be, like, under the table.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And, everybody's talking about how Ted Cruz should be who we get behind, but, I don't know about that.
You guys
that.
Think it'll be a Hillary Sanders ticket?
Oh, my,
What?
I feel like that can't lose, as much as I want to say it.
No, no, I think it could. I don't think the Democratic establishment wants Hillary as much as, you know, CNN kind of seems to give Sanders the Ron Paul treatment and kind of ignore him. I think the establishment realizes that Hillary's ship has kind of sailed and that she's viewed very negatively. There were rumors out there that supposedly Trump was Hillary shill.
Like Glenn Beck was all like, they hired Trump to make sure that Hillary
can
become president.
We can go off topic from the race topic now, or we can stay on it. I don't really have anything more to say. This is not an area where I'm super knowledgeable, or even any knowledgeable at all.
Because you're white privilege.
Yeah, I can't be cool because I'm white, obviously, and I'm a male.
Well,
I'm a guy, so that takes away my privilege.
Look, the fact that I have boobs and a vagina makes me, you know, obviously more knowledgeable. I'm not even a good feminist. Like, I couldn't even when I was progressive, couldn't even be a good feminist. But I mean, well, I guess I'll leave this to, if there's anybody, I guess we can continue to go off topic if you guys still have time and anybody wants to listen to like a 2-hour long podcast. But if anybody that's listening wants to send in any thoughts or questions or anything they want to talk about, or if you want to send us anything you want to talk about, you can get at us on Twitter at Newborn Liberty. You can email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com or go to the Facebook, search out Newborn Libertarian and leave a comment there and just give us your thoughts. Now, everybody go on. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, maybe we should talk about feminism.
Oh, God.
You know, Okay, well, I will say this. I'm about utilitarianism. When I read this book called The Subjection of Women by John Stuart Mill.
Mm-hmm.
And after that book, I literally considered myself a feminist. My mother has a master's degree in neuropsychiatry, trauma and development
Thurman's
disorders.
A better feminist than I am.
Yeah, you know, I grew up around an independent, strong, kind of black woman. So, I like the idea of egalitarianism. When I said earlier in the beginning of the podcast, why can't we have that ideal society? Why can't we? Why shouldn't we? You know, I'll submit and say that it's not here, but why can't we? Maybe that's because most women don't want it. And I don't agree with, I think a lot of the women out there that are feminists, they don't do John Stuart Mill, right? You know, they don't do the actual feminism movement justice in the 18th century. And I think a lot of these feminists nowadays don't know what they're talking about. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't know who Alice Bailey is. A lot of people don't, you know, just all the writers that came out and stuff.
I think,
And I have a Tumblr account, and on Tumblr I've seen stuff where like women are like, all men are pigs, blah blah blah, and that really puts a bad name out there for feminists. Just like there's ignorant black people who put a bad name out there for pro black people. You know what I mean?
I think this is
just like the bad pro white people.
Yeah, I think this is where we need to get Christian. We need to try to get Amy on this podcast because I know she's a feminist. She's said that she's a feminist, but not a feminazi. So maybe I can try to persuade her to get on here.
Yeah, we should get that, and we should get that as a as kind of a topic. My personal thoughts on feminism, like where it originally comes from, because you know, women originally did not have the right to vote, and they did not have the right to do all these things. And feminism is kind of more like an equal rights movement. And I think if you're going to have the right to vote, I think everyone should have the right to vote. Even, you know, I kind of take Rothbard's point of view, and I don't, maybe this isn't his point of view. Maybe I should do a little bit more studying before I say something like that. But, you know, if you're going to let anyone vote, why not let children vote? You know, but of course I think democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner in the first place. But I think, feminism as that, you know, men and women have the same rights. It doesn't matter what their gender, you know, no one can steal from them. No one can hurt them. No one can take their stuff. I think in its purest sense of the word, I think feminism is a very libertarian thing. And I think that we should, maybe try to redirect it or put it back on where where it should be. I don't know. I'm not well versed on this thing either.
Well, it's all about women coming together and making feminism what it should be. You know, just like Kim said earlier, if you want liberty, you can't wait around for somebody else to talk about it. You know, you can't let your master give you liberty. You can't let your master give you freedom. You have to take it for yourself.
And not expect, right? You know, for somebody to ask them, you know, for your freedom, or say, you have to give it to me, or, you know, it's got to be, I have to be above you. Because that's what it seems to be, is a lot of people say, I need your forgiveness. I need your, like, submission. It's just you saying, you know what? I'm a human being with rights, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate that, you know, as you said, feminism is very libertarian, but unfortunately they're just associating themselves with whatever group will listen to them. And that just happens to be the progressive group.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend, when I met her, she first flat out told him, she goes, yeah, I'm a socialist. She's now a libertarian.
As it should be.
But, you know, I think she struggles especially with that, you know, how do you connect as a modern-day feminist and be a libertarian? And I think that's something that should be explored a little bit more within the libertarian movement, because, you know, they are they're half the population. And, you know, libertarians are not going to win it just being a male-oriented group.
I think we should get Amy on here and have a completely, you know, a podcast kind of dedicated to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought I came prepared for today's episode, but I'm sure everyone was like, oh, man, this guy didn't show up today. But, I'm glad I had Thurman here to give me some perspective on some things I hadn't thought about. And Kim, of course, and Tim, you know, I remember when Tim messaged me first, he thought I was a well-spoken guy. Well, Tim, we should have had – everyone else should have shut up and listened to Tim today.
Sorry. My gosh. I come to Christian for questions.
It's different live. I'm just kidding. No, everyone's great. So next time, I think Kim and I, do you want to do the Game of Thrones kind of libertarian analysis of that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Unbelievable.
Are you in for that, Tim?
That sounds amazing.
Sweet.
And then,
I can't believe we have to do that.
Oh yeah. Hey, Thurman, are you in for that?
I'd be so down. I'd love to be a guest again.
Have you watched Game of Thrones, or?
I'm completely caught up, dude. I know a little bit of the historical background and where it comes from, but I have not read the books.
That's okay. We'll try to keep spoilers to a minimum. And then after that, I kind of talked with one of my friends. We had the egalitarianism or equality versus liberty kind of thing. So Thurman, I thought, since you're kind of more, you know, you have a kind of favorable view towards egalitarianism, we can have you back on for that one, as well as see if my other friend wants to come on and kind of – we can hash this out.
Wonderful.
Okay. Kim, do you want to wrap it up, or I'm not trying to take over anything, but.
That's all good. I just figured, like I said last time, you're the well-spoken one. I'm just the weird one. That's what I do. I'm just going to have to say either you will continue trying to find your connections for theme songs, or you're going to just end up with me spending my weekend with my guitars making something really weird for theme music. So
okay.
You might want
to. If you want a theme, I'm sorry. If you want a theme song, I'll write it for you. I'm actually a musician by trade.
Oh, so am I. Maybe we need to, what do you do, man?
You guys should trade.
Aha! I actually went, my education, I actually went to college for music. I'm a percussionist, but I've been playing flute for the past 2 months.
Okay, so I guess it's not very libertarian of me to say flute players, just whatever.
You PC friend?
I started out on the saxophone, but my main stuff is guitar and bass. But you know. But
I have absolutely no musical talent.
But yeah, me, you, and you, Thurman, we need to work on a theme song for this podcast. It'd be great.
Yeah,
but
I'll update you up on Facebook.
I guess we'll talk about, because anybody listening to it is probably bored as heck listening to this. So I guess I'll wrap this up, and then we'll talk about this off the podcast. But to wrap this up, thank you guys for listening. I guess you've heard what we're going to be doing next, so you should probably tune in for that. It'll probably come out soon. And like I said earlier, if you want to hit us up, Twitter, Newborn Liberty, And email is newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Search us out on Facebook at Newborn Libertarian. And tune in next time. And this is your host, Kim, with...
Christian. And the guests.
Tim.
And... Thurman, live free or die!
All right. Until next time, guys. Thanks for listening.